Next Sunday is a special Sunday for us. We're going to have a celebration and kind of a combination opening also, dedication of our building. And it's going to be, I hope and plan and hope that it'll be a fun time that we're together, and hope that you're planning to bring some guests. It's a good time to introduce folks. We'll have one single service, so just lop the first one off and everybody come to the second one. And hopefully we'll have a house full, overflowing, have some great singing, and everyone should be getting a letter this week telling you what to bring, but just lots of folks have asked today. So as Sam announced this morning, the bread, meat, and drinks will be provided, so bring everything else. And we'll look forward to being together. Also, a little bit of a clarification about the Philippines. Tyrone is here on the front row, so if you have any questions about that particular thing, then you can talk to him. He'll be happy to talk to you. The elders announced for you to make your check out to the Nueces Church of Christ if you would like to be a part of that relief effort. And you can mail it directly to them. I noticed a lot of folks giving the elders checks this morning. Some gave me some checks, and so we'll put those all together and mail those this week and let the folks know there at Nueces know how much is coming so they can release those funds so that they'll be able to take them with them. Tyrone's leaving Tuesday, and I think Ken Wilkie's leaving Wednesday going over there, and they're going to be right there in that area that is directly affected. And so if you would like to have a part in that, again, I would encourage you to make a check out to the Nueces Church, give it to one of the elders if you'd like, or you can mail it directly yourself. The advantage, at least for this moment, of giving it to the elders, the elders didn't want you to feel like you had to let them know what you were doing. And so they said you could mail it. But if you would like for that money to be made available to be carried over this week, then you can let the elders know, and they'll have an accumulative amount, and the Nueces Church will release those funds to these guys going over. Just for your information, and this is just purely speculative on my part, except what I have heard has come in, we're over $7,000 so far. So that'll do lots of good, and hope that we'll look forward to hearing a report from Tyrone when he gets back. And let's certainly keep him in his prayers. You're going to be back the first week in November? November the 2nd. Okay. So let's keep him in our prayers. Put him on your prayer list. Have you ever found out that you were good at something that you didn't want to be good at? I have. I'm not going to tell you what it is. But I really didn't want to be good at it. In fact, I found out a couple of things that I was pretty good at that I really didn't want to be good at. And then when preaching, that falls in the other category maybe, that I really wanted to be good at. That was my next line there. Or is there anything that you've ever really wanted to be good at and found out you weren't so good at it? I will tell you about that. I really wanted to be the quarterback on the football team. But I wasn't good enough. I was a pretty good lineman because you can be slow and be a pretty good lineman. And I did get to play fullback some because, you know, they can give you the ball and you can drag somebody about 3 yards and pick up the first down sometimes. So got to do that. But I never was fast enough to be really good at the sports that required speed. And that always upset me. I tried to be fast. And you either can be or you can't be. You know, there's only so much that you can improve. And I couldn't improve enough to play the positions that I would like to. I will also tell you that when I was in school, and I think I've mentioned this to some of you before, I really wanted to be good at math. A guy is supposed to be good at math. but I wasn't good at math. I was good at English, and I didn't want to be good at English. In fact, as it turned out, I got a college scholarship based on English, and I didn't want it. Now, I couldn't tell my folks that because it meant some money for them, you know, to help pay for college, but I didn't want that because it meant that I had to take some advanced courses in English, and I took them, but I didn't really enjoy that, and that's unfortunate in a way. And I want to talk about something about our talents tonight and using our talents. And in case I forget, there are some things that we all can do. And one of the things that we can all do is we can be friendly. And next Sunday, it's really important that you be friendly to folks that you don't know. We've got lots of new folks here in this congregation. And every time you go up to somebody and stick your hand out and introduce yourself, you run the risk of somebody saying, well, I've been here, you know, for some time. But they'll probably forgive you easier than they'll forgive me, and I do it nearly every week. And so be friendly to people that you don't know. It's really important. We'll have some guests next week. Some folks have already told me they're bringing guests. And so make sure that you cross age boundaries. It doesn't have to be just somebody your own age. Just somebody that, if there's somebody here that you don't know, just go up to them and introduce yourself and make them welcome that they're here. As I look at the church, I see four groups of people. The involved and happy, and that's the goal for all of us. The involved and frustrated. The uninvolved and frustrated. And the uninvolved and apathetic. And I think that there are entirely too many people. I won't venture a guess as to how many there may be in those two middle groups, the involved and frustrated and the uninvolved and frustrated. But that's the two that I'm going to kind of target this evening. The involved and frustrated group asks, why doesn't everybody get involved? Everybody's benefiting. Why do just a few people have to carry the load? And the uninvolved and frustrated say, I'm really not involved in anything meaningful. And maybe it's because they're shy or uncertain. Maybe it's because they feel like they're on the outside looking in, and in the case of the congregation here, maybe it's because you're new to the congregation and you're trying to adjust to a new environment and you just haven't found a slot to fit in. And a question for all of us as a congregation, how many, and you just answer this to yourself, how many of our members do you suppose, just your opinion, are really involved in the work? What percentage would you think are really involved? Now, nobody answer that, okay? Out loud, anyway. But everybody answer it to yourself. What percentage of people do you think have an involvement in the congregation that they really feel good about? My next question is, are we satisfied with that? And I know the answer to that is no, we're not. If it's less than 100%, we're not. And are we doing something that really encourages people to be involved? And will the future be any different than the present is in this regard? And is there anything that we're doing to try to make the future be different than it currently is? I believe it is a fundamental truth that Christians cannot grow if we're not involved. We grow spiritually, and I know Brother Elton has had several times in his class on discipleship talking about the master's yoke. And Jesus said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. And whatever you make that yoke be, I think we have it exactly the opposite of what the Lord intended for it to be. we think that we have to learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. And then at some point down the line, when we've got all our questions answered and we're happy with everything, then we'll commit to be involved. Jesus said, if you want to learn about me, the first thing you're going to have to do is pick my yoke up. You're going to have to accept some responsibility here. And when you do that, and when you get involved and you get yoked, then he said, then you'll learn of me. You cannot learn of Jesus on the outside or God the Father on the outside like you can on the inside. And until you're involved in the work, you can't really know what Jesus is talking about. He sent his disciples out, and they tried some things, and some things they didn't do so well at, and some things they did really well at, and they came back, and he helped them evaluate it. They were in the yoke, weren't they? And they were learning of him and learning about him and learning about his way. And there's no other way that we can do it. And when we get it backwards, and as a matter of fact, I'm afraid that sometimes we put the learning as a substitute for ever doing anything. And we just learn and learn and learn and learn. And we enjoy learning, at least for a while. But if you never put it to practical use, then even the joy of learning gets kind of old for most people. A goal that we need is to have every member involved in some meaningful activity through which our personal talents can be discovered and developed. A congregation can't grow if its members are not actively involved. If you want a formula for a dying church, then it is that members meet together and leave quickly and have no interaction between the times that we meet together. That's a pretty good formula for a dying church. Being involved in one another's lives. Christianity is more than what we do right here. Christianity is interaction with one another. And our lives intertwined. And as we think about each of us being involved in the Lord's work in some meaningful activity, and I know that there are people who've never been involved in anything that they find really meaningful in the Lord's work. And I want to highly recommend that to you. And it's probably going to come in a form of something that you may not choose on the outside. You may find that you have a talent for something that you don't particularly like having a talent for. It's kind of interesting that way. And as we look and see how it is that we utilize our talents and discover our talents, the first thing that we have to recognize is that there is a concept of personal gifts. And the epistles have a lot to say about that. And particularly Paul writing to the Corinthians, he has a lot. But in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11 and 12, a passage that we're all familiar with, it tells us what the purpose of church leaders is. It is to fully equip the saints for the work of ministering. That's our job as church leaders. That should be our focus. That should be what we pray about, what we're working toward. And in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10 and 11, he says that there are two kinds of gifts. There are speaking gifts and there are serving gifts. And if you stop and think about it, that pretty well categorizes it, doesn't it? Since it's in the Bible, it would, but you have those who speak, meaning that they preach or they teach or in either publicly, privately, whatever, they have the gift of speaking. And there are those that have the gift of serving. And so he says, if anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. And if anyone serves, he should do it with the strength that God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. And so as we think about two kinds of gifts, and we start trying to analyze what our gift may be, then don't just look at the ones that you wish that you had. You think about, and as you go about your activities in life, you gravitate, your life gravitates toward things that you're good at. Even sometimes subconsciously. Things that you may or may not enjoy doing initially, but that you're good at. And if you have your Bibles, then turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And in the first part of that chapter, he's, as you know, Corinthians is broken down. It outlines itself really easily because it's just dealing with one problem after another after another. And they're having a problem in the church at Corinth with the spiritual gifts, and particularly the gift of speaking in tongues in the first century. And everybody that had it flaunted it, and everybody that didn't have it felt jealous because they didn't have it. And so there was a lot of friction in the church over this one particular gift. And so there are lots of ideas floating around about this gift and how it can be used and how it's misused and so forth. And Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 3, "Therefore I tell you that no one who is speaking by the Spirit of God says Jesus be cursed, and no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit." So evidently there was some utterances going on that they weren't quite sure what it meant, and some people were accusing people of saying this, and others were saying no, he couldn't be saying that. So he's dealing with that. And then verse 4, there are different kinds of spiritual gifts. Verse 5, there are different kinds of service. Verse 6, there are different kinds of workings. And those three words build on one another. They're the gifts, the service, and the workings. And there are so many ways to approach this. Here's at least three ways that we're all different. Everybody has different gifts. That's the first part. And different combinations of gifts. And then the second thing is there are some people who use one gift in a particular way, and there's someone else that has that same gift and they use it in another way. And so he says there are different gifts and there are different workings. There are different ways to utilize that gift. And then even further than that, he says there are different kinds of, the second word is service, and the third one is workings. And that word workings means the effect produced by utilizing your gift. And so there are different gifts, there are different ways to use it, and there are different effects that come from using it in different ways. And so if you think about those three and how many different ways that you can come up with combinations of how different people can be, I don't know how many that would be because you'd have to determine how many gifts there were, how many different ways each person could utilize, each gift could be utilized, and then how many possible effects there would be from that. But that would be lots and lots of variables there. And he's talking about variables. And what he's saying is there's a lot of differences. And everybody doesn't have to look alike, and everybody doesn't have to have the same gift, and everybody doesn't have to use the gift that they have in exactly the same way that everybody else does. And besides all that, if you turn that over to God and you use your gift, and you let God use it in His service, then He'll be the one responsible for what the outcome's going to be. And so you can't lose. The only way you can lose is if you don't use your gift. And so if you use your gift and allow, or more specifically, allow God to use it, then there's going to be lots of things that are going to be happening within a body. And those are going to be good, encouraging things. And it's going to be a really neat thing to watch people use their gifts. Isn't it really a neat thing to you to watch somebody discover that they have a gift and begin to utilize that gift and watch that develop? We get to do that in a classic sense with our young men, don't we? They get up and they lead prayers, or they speak and are they lead singing, and you get to see them improve more and more and more. The more they use it, the better they get, right? Now, wouldn't that be neat if the young people got to see us do that? if they got to see us discover some gifts that we had, and as we used it more and more, then we got better and better at it. I think we owe them that. We want that from them. And we owe them that same thing, to set an example of that. And so we first recognize the concept of personal gifts. And then the concept that gifts turn into a ministry. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 says that we're all priests offering service to God. And the word ministry is translated from two words. Diakonoi is the Greek word that comes from two, bringing together two Greek words. It means to serve through. We get the word deacon from it. A deacon is someone who performs a service, but actually the church is performing the service through him. And so he is the one through whom the church is ministering. So a deacon is one who serves, and others are serving through him. When someone is appointed as a deacon, and the church is serving through him. In fact, as I was thinking about this, and I don't mean to embarrass anybody, but one of the more difficult jobs is in a church has always been the benevolence. And we have a deacon who works over benevolence who does an outstanding job. And it's a really, really neat thing, because I have to tell you that in almost every place I've been, guess who got to do the benevolent work? You know, the one who was at the office. You know, the preacher did. And it's a really neat thing here that whenever someone calls and they need assistance, they just pick up the phone and call Gary, and he needs just a bare amount of information how to get in touch with them, and it's his baby from there on. And he not only doesn't complain about it, he does it with a really good attitude. And it's not an easy thing. In fact, last week, one day, he lost an entire day waiting on somebody who said they needed $700 to help pay bills, and he set about three different appointments for them, and they didn't show up. And he pretty much lost a whole day for that. And then there's another word that, as priests, the ministrations of priests, it is our service. The service that priests have is liturgia. We get the word liturgy from it. Remember what the goal of church leaders is? To equip the saints for the work of ministering. And so our ministry is simply using your gifts to serve. As a priest, we're all priests. And what do we offer? We offer service. We offer service. Now, that's not the only way the Bible says that. Romans 12:1 says we offer our bodies as living sacrifices. But how do we do that? We do it through service. We do it through serving others. And as that happens, the church grows and prospers when members serve. And the more members that you have serving one another and this community, the stronger the church becomes. And the more diverse and the more solid it becomes. And so our real challenge is to develop within ourselves and to encourage in others a servant's heart. Mark chapter 10, verse 45, Jesus said, "For even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many." In John 13, verse 1 through 17, in the context of washing his disciples' feet, once that was over, Jesus said, "Once you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them." It's not just enough to learn and learn and learn. But we put these things into practice and learn how to utilize the gifts that we have. Galatians 5:13, "You brothers were called to be free, but do not use your freedom." And he's about to tell you two basic ways that you can use your freedom. He says, do not use your freedom to indulge your sinful nature. That's one way that you can use your freedom. But rather to serve one another in love. That's another way you can use your freedom. Now, how do most of us view our freedom? That's mine, right? My free time, my free money, my free whatever. This is mine. You know, all the rest of it belongs to somebody. This is mine. He says, don't use your freedom to serve yourself. Use your freedom to serve others. And that would really be something if we made a practical application of that. That some of our free time, we didn't just think about how I can be entertained, but we would take at least some portion of our free time and think, how can I use this to serve others? What can I do for somebody else to enhance the Lord's work? And so the principle, it is more blessed to give than to receive, is a principle that's only understood by mature persons. A child cannot understand that principle. Not really. It is more blessed to give than to receive. Because we're all about, when we're immature, we're all about receiving. And when we're mature, we're about giving. I know that Nathan used this in a class not long ago, and when he did, my heart fell because it's one of my favorite little stories. And so I'm going to use it anyway. I'm going to act like he didn't use it, and I'm going to use it anyway. And it has to do with the fact that true service really does cost you. It's not something you can just lip off. It's not something that you can just get done in a moment. True service, a life of service, really does cost you. And those of you that are familiar with children's books are familiar with The Velveteen Rabbit. And it's just one of my favorite all-time stories. And the setting, this section is entitled, What is Real? And the little toy rabbit is talking to the toy horse in the little boy's room. What is real? Asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side. Real isn't how you're made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you when a child loves you for a long, long time. Not just to play with you, but really loves you. Then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes, said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. When you're real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. It doesn't happen to people who break easily or have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes have dropped out and you get loose at the joints and very shabby. But those things don't matter at all because once you're real, you can't be ugly. Except to people who don't understand. Now, isn't that a neat story? True service, becoming real in God's service, it costs you. It changes you. We have a responsibility to discover and use our gifts. God has entrusted you with some gifts. I hope that you're discovering what they are. I hope you know what some of them are already, and I hope that you're discovering more. And he promised you if you use the ones you have, he'll give you some more. And so it's something that never ends. But you need to know about your gifts that they are significant. There are no insignificant gifts. They are significant, and they're valuable. In fact, continuing in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 14 through 25, he talks about, and it took me a long time for one thing to dawn on me in this section right here where he's talking about the ear says this and the eye says this. You remember that section? Well, the first part of that section is the ear or the eye is talking to itself. And then in verse 21, the eye starts saying something to the hand, and he changes. And there is a significance in that change because the first part is viewing how we view ourselves. And we tend to downplay ourselves. And we say, because I'm not an eye, I'm not important. Or because I'm not a hand, I'm not important. And he says, that's not true. And then he shifts in verse 21, and the body parts start talking to one another. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you, or the head say to the feet, I don't need you. How we view one another. And both of those things are incredibly important. Because you'll never develop your talents until you learn to view them properly. And God tells you here in this context how to view your talents. There are none that are unimportant. They're all significant. In fact, he's going to say God placed each one in the body as he saw fit. That's me and you. And it's important that you understand and have a proper perspective of your gifts that God's given you. And it's also important that you understand the importance of other people's gifts, because it's different than you. And if you want everybody to look just like you, then we're going to all be in a big mess. And he says that here. He said, where would the body be if all the body parts were an eye? We'd just be one big old eyeball. Well, what could we do? We could see well, but we couldn't see behind us because we wouldn't be able to turn around, would we? We could just see whatever that eye could see. And we couldn't go anywhere and we couldn't accomplish anything. As great as the eye is, and I certainly want my body to have an eye, I'm glad that all of my body is not an eye, aren't you? And so it's really, and it's almost humorous how he says this. And it might require some creativity on your part to learn and discover your gifts and how to use your gifts. And by the way, I have a favorite story about creativity too. And let me read it to you. It's called The Red Flower. Once a little boy went to school. It was quite a big school. But when he found he could go right to his room from the playground outside, he was happy, and the school didn't seem quite so big anymore. One morning when he had been in school for a while, the teacher said, today we're going to make a picture. Good, thought the little boy. He liked to make pictures. He could make lions and tigers and trains and boats. He took out his crayons and began to draw. But the teacher said, wait, it's not time to begin. And she waited until everyone looked ready. Now, said the teacher, we're going to make flowers. Good, thought the little boy. He began to make beautiful flowers with his orange and pink and blue crayons. But the teacher said, wait. And she drew a picture on the board, a flower. It was red with a green stem. There, now you may begin. The little boy looked at the teacher's flower. He liked his better, but he didn't say so. He just turned his paper over and made a flower like the teacher. It was red with a green stem. Another day, the teacher said, today we're going to make something with clay. Good, thought the little boy. He can make all kinds of things with clay, snakes and snowmen and elephants and mice. And he began to pinch and pull his ball of clay. But again, the teacher said, wait, I'll show you how. And she showed everyone how to make a deep dish. And the little boy just rolled his clay into a round ball and made a dish just like the teacher. Pretty soon, the little boy learned to wait and watch and make things just like the teacher. And soon, he didn't make things of his own anymore. Then it happened that the little boy and his family moved to another city. He had to go to another school. On the very first day, the teacher said, today, we're going to make a picture. Good, thought the boy. And he waited for the teacher to tell him what to do, but the teacher didn't say anything. She just walked around the room, and she came to his desk. She said, don't you want to make a picture? Yes, said the boy. What are we going to make? Well, I don't know until you make it, the teacher said. Well, how should I make it, asked the boy. Why, any way you like. And any color? Any color, said the teacher. If everyone made the same thing in the same color, how would I know who made what and which was what? I don't know, said the boy. And he began to draw a flower. It was red with a green stem. We need to be creative about how to reach out into our community. There are lots of needs in this community. Some of those needs we can meet. If we'll think about it and pray about it and have a desire to. Or otherwise, we'll keep drawing a flower, a red one with a green stem. Your gifts will define your ministry. But even more than that, your desire to use those gifts. Remember the Lord's treatment of the one talent man, what he said when he came back? And I suppose if anybody had an excuse, he did. What if he lost that one talent? I mean, if he had 10 and he lost one, he'd still have 9, wouldn't he? But he had one, and he buried it because he was afraid. And the Lord said, "You wicked, lazy servant. Cast him outside. Take the one he's got and give it to the guy that's got 10. It all starts with you getting self out of the way and developing a desire to please God and a determination to overcome two things that keep you from using your talents, and that's fear and selfishness. And I don't know of anything else that stops us from using our talents. Fear and selfishness. And both of those things are sinful. We'll excuse one of them pretty easily, won't we? But the Lord doesn't. And repeatedly he says, fear not. Grow through involvement. I challenge you to look at yourself and ask yourself, is God pleased with how I'm using the gifts that he's trusted me to serve others? Are you growing in your ministry? Are you involved and happy? Are you involved and frustrated? Are you uninvolved and frustrated? Are you uninvolved and apathetic? And I pray that we don't have any in that last category here. But if you're uninvolved and you want to be involved, then one thing that we can do is we can sit down and talk together and we can pray together. And you can come to the leaders of the congregation. You can come to someone who has a ministry and find a place. There's certainly lots of room in the ministries that we have going on, and there is definitely a need for additional ministries to reach out into this community and to reach out and serve one another, isn't there, in this congregation? And it's so easy just to sit back and let somebody else do it, isn't it? But that's not the way we want to live our lives as Christians. God has entrusted to us talents. And one day we'll stand before him and give an answer of how we've used those talents. Consider that while we stand and sing.